Class is back in session. It's time for Baptist Basics University from BaptistBasics.org.
Welcome back to a long overdue Baptist Basics University episode. This is lesson number 11 in our series on the book of Daniel, covering chapter 10, which we're going to title Daniel's Preparation. Now, Daniel chapter 10, 11, and 12 are really one entire story. These three chapters are really one narrative. Up to this point, chapters 1 through 9 have basically been one story, one vision, one event per chapter. And but really when we're dealing with chapters, the last three chapters, chapters 10, 11, and 12, we have to think of this as one story. Otherwise, it sounds a little, it doesn't quite fit the same flow. And that's mainly due to the chapter divisions. Now, chapter 10 is kind of unique. It really is preparation for what follows in the next couple of chapters. This is, we're going to see Daniel praying, and then a message coming for Daniel from angels. And we get a glimpse behind the scenes. That's probably what this chapter is most remembered for, is just a little glimpse behind the scenes of the supernatural realm, of the spiritual battles that very likely are taking place around us, between the forces of Satan and the forces of God. And that's something, honestly, I don't get a lot into, I don't want to call it spiritual warfare, because a lot of people kind of take that a different way, but I don't really get into a lot of the angels and demons and things like that. But we get the curtain pulled back just for a glimpse here in this chapter, and get a glimpse of what goes on behind the scenes. And I do believe there is more to this life than what we see. I do believe there are angels. I do believe there are demons. And I can understand that there are things going on around us that would scare us half to death if we fully comprehended, fully understood. But we see just a little glimpse here in a couple of verses that deal with that subject. Now, topically speaking, this, as I say, these last three chapters forming one vision, one story. Really, it's about kind of filling in some details of end times, really a lot. When we get in chapter 11, it's going to be a lot about Persia and Greece, filling in a lot of very detailed history. It's really cool stuff that we'll get into there. But chapter 10, what we're dealing with here is basically Daniel being prepared to receive this message. Now, I tell you what, we'll just jump right on in and go from there. Chapter 10 of Daniel, verse 1. In the third year of Cyrus, king of Persia, a thing was revealed unto Daniel, whose name was Belteshazzar, and the thing was true, but the time appointed was long, and he understood the thing and had understanding of the vision. So the timeline here, third year of Cyrus, that's about 534 BC. Daniel is about 90 years old at this time. This is no longer a young man. This is near the end of his life. A lot of people that I've seen believe Daniel lived to be about 90 years old. This is in the twilight of his life that he is receiving this vision. I like some of the descriptive language here, that the thing was true, that it was correct, that it was honest, that it was going to happen, but the time appointed was long. That Daniel understood what was going to happen. God, in this prophecy, foretold what was going to happen. Daniel understood it, but he also understood it was going to be some time before this thing revealed. This wasn't a mystery to him. Daniel had a clear understanding of what was going on. Verse 2. In those days, I, Daniel, was mourning 3 full weeks. Verse 3. I ate no pleasant bread, neither came flesh nor wine in my mouth, neither did I anoint myself at all till 3 whole weeks were fulfilled. So we see Daniel here in a state of mourning, in a state of fasting, that his heart is so troubled that he's not eating his regular diet. He's not eating foods associated with merriment or pleasure. Now, it's not saying he is not eating, but he's basically he's eating bread and water, you know, just the most basic necessity to stay alive. Not eating anything fancy, anything tasty, nothing that you would enjoy eating, just eating to stay alive. This is not saying that he has not ate in 3 weeks, because it's very specific about what he hasn't ate. Pleasant bread, flesh and wine, these are fancier type foods. Basically, in this humbling of himself in this time of fasting, he's basically, that's the best way I can describe it to a modern day person, be like bread and water. Now, I don't know what food he technically was eating. Maybe it was just bowls of beans with no flavoring, no seasoning, but whatever it was as simple and as humble a meal as he could get. Now, there is nothing given here about what caused this. Why would Daniel be so troubled as to cause this 3-week fast? J. Vernon McGee kind of speculates that and chronologically this will make some sense, that by this time it's likely that the Jews have now become free to return to Israel. Daniel's 90 years old. The captivity period is about 70 years. He was just a young man, young teenager when he was taken captive. So this may actually be a few years past that time point from when they were allowed to actually go back. But the problem was is that so few had chosen to do so. So many of them had decided to stay in really not so much bondage, but stay there in the land of Babylon and servants of Babylon in this foreign land among foreign people, and Jews basically forsaking their identity and to an extent their culture and not returning back to the promised land, but to stay here in this heathen land. And that was breaking Daniel's heart. Now, that chronologically, Nehemiah and Ezra, that has not happened yet. This would be very early. But that's historically speaking, and from the record of the Bible, that's what appears to have happened. Once the Jews were allowed to return back to the land, there wasn't a flood of people. There was just a trickle of people at first. And before the likes of Nehemiah and Ezra come in and really lead back and really reestablish the Jewish state and the Jewish presence there in the land of Israel. Verse 4. And in the 24th day of the first month, as I was by the side of the great river, which is Hiddekel. The time frame for this is spring, it's April. Hiddekel, this is an ancient name for what we nowadays call the Tigris River. So just to give you an idea, he's still there, in Babylon, and he's by the banks of this, of the river, the Tigris River. Verse 5, when I lifted up mine eyes and looked, and behold, a certain man clothed in linen, whose loins were girded with the fine gold of Euphaz. Verse 6, his body was like a beryl, and his face as appearance of lightning, and the eyes of, as lamps of fire, and his arms and feet like a color to polished brass, and the voice of his words like a voice of a multitude. Now, who is this? Who is Daniel seeing? Well, not really sure. It's not clear. We just have a description of him. Now, I'll tell you, though, if you flip over into the New Testament, to the book of Revelation, in chapter 1, which I'm attempting to do. There we go. Revelation chapter 1, verses 12 and, through 16. When John saw Christ, he said, and I turned to see the voice that spake with me, and being turned, I saw seven golden candlesticks. In the midst of the seven candlesticks one like unto the Son of Man, clothed with a garment down to the foot, and girt about the paps with a golden girdle. His head and his hairs were white like wool, as white as snow. His eyes were as a flame of fire, and his feet like unto fine brass, and they burned in, as if they burned in a furnace, and his voice as the sound of many waters. And he had in his right hand 7 stars, and out of his mouth went a sharp two-edged sword, and his countenance was as the sun shineth in his strength. There's a lot of similarities between these two, the eyes as fire, the feet like brass, the voice, that's sometimes used the voice of God, very similar words like a rushing water and things like that. So I think who he is seeing here is the glorified Christ, is probably pre-incarnate, but he is catching a vision of Christ really a lot of it's based on the comparison of the description there, but also in the Old Testament. When God appears to man, I believe it is Christ that people see. And I don't necessarily want to get into that. We'll probably get into that a little bit in the next series that I'm already behind on recording. When we get into the life of Christ, we'll get into a little bit of that in the introduction lesson. But when we talk about what Christ did and Christ in the Old Testament. Christ is the visible portion of the Godhead. He is God revealed to man, even in the Old Testament. Just my personal belief, and I've got some evidence for it, and I can show you stuff to prove it. But my personal belief is when people saw God in the Old Testament, whether it was Moses speaking to him face to face or whoever, I believe they saw Jesus Christ. And I think that's who he is seeing here. And a lot of it is you compare this description Daniel to the description John gives in Revelation chapter 1. They are very, very similar. So I think we're seeing the same individual. Verse 7. And I, Daniel, alone saw the vision, for the men that were with me saw not the vision, but a great quaking fell upon them, so that they fled to hide themselves. Who's that remind you of? This reminds me very much of what happens to Paul on the Damascus Road as he's traveling along and Christ speaks to him. You know, the people around him saw light. They heard something, but they didn't experience the fullness, didn't have the full vision revealed to them. And I think this is something very similar. Another maybe little check mark there saying this very likely is Christ comparatively in the whole of Scripture, that this same reaction is what happens when Christ appeared to Paul. Verse 8, therefore I was left alone and saw this great vision, and there remained no strength in me, for my comeliness was turned in me into corruption, and I retained no strength. Now, this is something, and I've gotten the notes, you can compare this over to the book of Isaiah, but this is a common reaction to seeing the glory of God in the Bible, that people would just about pass out, that they could not handle, could not take in the glory of God. This is basically what happens to Isaiah. Isaiah, when he catches a glimpse of God glorified on his throne, he just falls flat. And we've already seen this in Daniel, when Daniel has had some of these visions, has had similar reactions. But this is another case, whoever he's seeing here is deity, and I believe is Jesus Christ. But you can compare that if you want to Isaiah chapter 6, verses 5 through 8. I use that a lot, but when Isaiah gets a vision of God. Verse 9. Yet I heard the voice of his words, and when I heard the voice of his words, then was I in a deep sleep on my face, and my face toward the ground. So this vision is Daniel, this poor 90-year-old man is by the banks of the river. He catches this vision. Those around him do not see it. The servants and the people around him do not see it. Daniel is flat out laid face down on the ground. And is going to receive this vision. verse number 10. And behold, an hand touched me, which set me upon my knees and upon the palms of my hands. In verse 11, he said to me, O Daniel, a man greatly beloved, understand the words that I speak unto thee, and stand upright, for unto thee am I now sent. And when he had spoken this word unto me, I stood trembling. Now, is this the same person that he saw previously? I don't believe so. I think this is a different individual. I think he's now speaking with an angel, that this is not the same individual he just saw that we've talked about being Christ. This is not Christ talking to him. This is an angel that's been sent to him. A lot of neat stuff in here we could talk about in those two verses. Notice that Daniel was laying face flat on the ground, and then he's kind of up on his hands and knees in verse 10. And verse 11, he's helped to his feet, and now he's standing trembling. So you can kind of have the progression there as he goes from on the ground to standing up. I like the description there in verse 11 that Daniel is a man greatly beloved. That's something that's going to be repeated in verse 19, that Daniel had a lot of favor with God, and that God loved this individual, this Daniel, that he had high regard with God. Verse 12. Then said he unto me, Fear not, Daniel, for from the first day that thou didst set thine heart to understand and to chasten thyself before thy God, thy words were heard, and I am come for thy words. So the angel's message is, hey, Daniel, we heard your prayer. Now, remember, it's been, 3 weeks, I believe? If we go back there and we look in verse number 2? Yeah. It's been 3 weeks. But just now, here's the answer, that the angel's just now coming. But the angel says, hey, I wanted to come. We heard your prayer immediately. Good little prayer principle here. That, you know, God hears our prayers immediately. Doesn't mean the answer comes right away, but we can rest assured that the message was received, that God heard our prayer. And in this case, it took 3 weeks for Daniel to get an answer to his prayer. But that did not mean the prayer had not been heard. The prayer had been heard, had been received. And, now we're about to get into the fun part here where we're going to see what happened. Why was this delayed? Verse 13. But the prince of the kingdom of Persia withstood me 120 days. But lo, Michael, one of the chief princes, came to help me, and I remained there with the kings of Persia. Okay. Who in the world is he talking about here? This is what I'm talking about when we see the curtain pulled back and we get a glimpse, not a full picture, but a glimpse of some spiritual warfare here. Who is this prince of the kingdom of Persia? Who in the world is that? That appears to be one of Satan's minions, that Satan has, power. Satan has dominion over this world, and Satan, in the structure of his forces, has his demons assigned to different areas, to different places, and this particular demon in charge of or looking over the affairs of the kingdom of Persia. Now, I mean, that is looking over to make sure, Satan's purposes are served. He is there, and for 21 days stops an angel of God. Now, what in the world? Well, there appears, based on this verse and some other things, that there appears to be a hierarchy of angels, and that some are perhaps more powerful than other ones. Some have greater ability maybe than other ones, but basically this messenger was no match for the demonic forces, and it took the intervention of Michael, who's described as one of the chief princes. That's, we believe, is one of the three archangels mentioned in the Bible. Michael, Gabriel, and then Lucifer, who fell and became Satan. And so basically this angel who arrives with this message had to appeal to a higher authority to get past this more powerful demonic force. So there's a lot of stuff we can imply from this verse. We can, you know, see that there are evidently different levels and abilities of these angelic and demonic beings. We can see that there is battle taking place. We can see some sort of structure and organization, like a, I picture like an army. So there's a lot of stuff we can get into, and this is just one little glimpse of one little verse. And I think this is one of the things where God wants to make us aware that this stuff is going on. It's not something I think that we're supposed to spend a lot of time on worrying about or studying, but it's something we should be aware of. In fact, I'll tell you, one of my, what should I call it? Like a red flag, I guess you could say, that I use when dealing with like, books, apocryphal books, even in the Bible, and even more modern teachings. You know, what do they do with angels? How much emphasis do they give them? And when they get into, and say, well, you would deal with apocryphal books in the Bible, a lot of them that were rejected by our church fathers for good reasons, deal with angels and get into these powers and names and try to explain all this. Now, I'm just not sure that God really expected us to, or even wants us to, have a full grasp of this. He just wants us to have an idea of what's going on and to realize that it is taking place. But there are more important things for us to know. This is something that God is handling. God, you know, it's not something that we need to necessarily worry about. But in this case, this is the explanation that's given for the delay. So, I mean, wow, think about it. You know, Satan was able to delay God. God's more powerful. Yes, he is. But Satan was actually able to delay this for 3 weeks. Now, there's purpose in behind that. God could have, you know, why didn't God send Michael at the very beginning? There is a purpose to this, and perhaps Daniel himself wasn't quite ready, but is actually the true purpose for the delay. That Daniel had to get his own heart ready to receive this vision, and it really has nothing to do with the whatever angels are battling around us. So anyway, I just want to point out that stuff is here. I don't necessarily get into it. I know a lot of books have been written about it, and even I've kid around and kind of played around writing kind of a more of a comedy book that deals a little bit with some of this, but you know, it's just not something I choose to spend a lot of time on studying, because it's something there's not a lot of detail given, and as I think it's just God reveals it to us to let us know it's happening, but it's not something that we should just desire to know. In fact, this reminds me something else I was studying for at my Sunday school lesson just a short while ago. This, to me, is the kind of thing where we get sidetracked you can get sidetracked in this focusing on non-essential things and unimportant things. It's just like you see someone playing a guitar, and musicians are bad about this, especially when you get into like guitars and acoustic instruments. Pianists, they just play the piano. But especially people that aren't or are learning or not that accomplished, you know, like playing the guitar, they'll hear someone play the guitar, and what do they want to know? What kind of guitar is that? Wow, what kind of strings do you have? Well, all that really pales in comparison to the person playing the guitar, but that's what most people want to know. It's like, oh, hey, what brand is that? How'd you make it? You know, how did you tune it? How did you, you know, what kind of strings are those? And all that's unimportant compared to who's playing it. Well, you know, it'd be just like I thought of, you know, it's like a magician, you know, pulling a rabbit out of a hat, and you're focused on, hey, what kind of rabbit is that? What kind of breed is it? Is it Angoran? What kind is it? And, you know, well, it doesn't matter. Focus on the big picture. The guy pulled a rabbit out of a hat, you know, how did he pull that trick off? So I think we get sidetracked into focusing on the non-essential and things like this. And here I am, I've fallen for it too. I've ranted on it for, what, about 5 minutes. So, but anyway, just to get that off my chest, and it's something that I'm going to deal with in my Sunday school lesson in the morning, is something very similar to this, where we get sidetracked off into a non-essential little detail of a story instead of focusing on the main purpose and main focus of the story. Oh, sorry. Let's go on. 14. Now I am come to make thee understand what shall befall thy people in the latter days, for yet the vision is for many days. Okay, there's three things here I think we need to focus on. And that is, who does this prophecy revolve around? Thy people. Who's thy people? Well, who's he speaking to? He's speaking to Daniel. Who's Daniel's people? Daniel's people? Israel. This all revolves around Israel. Prophecy in the Bible revolves around Israel. Not Britain, not America, not Iraq, not Egypt. It revolves around Israel. Next, we see it's in the latter days. So this part of it, at least, concerns end times. And we're going to jump from stuff that's going to be fulfilled within a few hundred years of Daniel to stuff that has yet to be filled for us, 2,500 years later. So we're going to have to wait a little while for some of this, but there is a latter days element. And then we see also it's for many days, that this is going to take a while for all this to be fulfilled. And as I say, here we sit 2,500 years later, and some of this still has not been fulfilled. Verse 15, and when he had spoken such words to me, I set my face toward the ground, and I became dumb. So he's gone from laying on the ground to on his hands and knees to standing up. Now that the angel spoke to him, he's now his face towards the ground. I kind of picture him back on his hands and knees. Verse 16, behold, one like the similitude of the sons of men touched my lips. This is an angel, perhaps a different angel. Then I opened my mouth and spake. This is another thing. This is very similar to what happens with Isaiah in Isaiah chapter 6. Isaiah sees God and says, whoa, I am a man of unclean lips. And an angel has to go and get a coal off the altar or something and touch his lips before he's able to speak. So a very similar thing here, that an angel has to touch his lips and says, then I opened my mouth and spake. And said unto him that stood before me, O my Lord, by the vision my sorrows are turned upon me, and I have retained no strength. And he's like, whoa, I can't handle this. There is something amazing that, spiritual things affect us physically. They really do. It's not just emotionally or psychologically. It affects us physically. A burden will affect us physically. I mean, it can, I'm sure if we checked your blood pressure will probably be high. It'll drain your energy. It'll feel like you actually are carrying around weights on your shoulders. It physically affects you. And in this case, this burden is so great, this vision is so great that he's receiving, that this poor 90-year-old man can say, hey, I can't handle this. Verse 17, for how can the servant of this, my Lord, talk with this, my Lord? For as for me, straightway there remained no strength in me, neither is there breath left in me. So like, look, I can't handle this. I can't even hardly breathe. Verse 18, then there came again and touched me one like the appearance of a man, and he strengthened me. So just for this poor 90-year-old prophet of God to receive this, he has to be supernaturally strengthened. Which gets us back into, I want to point out that, when God wants us to do something, he equips us for it. And if God calls us to do something, he equips us for it. He makes us able to do it. God needed Daniel to receive this vision, and he's going to strengthen Daniel so he can receive this vision. So when God tells us to do something, you can step back and say, oh, I can't do it for whatever reason. I'm not strong enough. I'm not smart enough. God equips us to do what he wants us to do. Verse 19, and said the angel speaking, O man greatly beloved, fear not, peace be unto thee, be strong, yea, be strong. And when he had spoken unto me, I was strengthened, and said, let my Lord speak, for thou hast strengthened me. So the angel speaks to him and has to kind of calm him down. Knows there, once again, O man greatly beloved. I mean, just the honor that has to be for Daniel. To fear not, settle down, don't be afraid. Be peaceful. Peace be unto thee. Fear not. Peace be unto thee. Those are words and phrases very similar to that throughout the Bible. And tell him to be strong. And so he's like, okay, look, now I go ahead and speak. I can handle it now. I'm okay. No more excuses. Verse 20. Then said he, knowest thou wherefore I come unto thee? And now will I return to fight with the prince of Persia. And when I am gone forth, lo, the prince of Grecia shall come. So the first little glimpse here of what's going to happen, that talking about what's going to come, it goes back to our outline of kingdoms, where we have Babylon to Persia to Greece to Rome. Well, he's basically saying, you know, Persia is going to come and the Greece is going to come. Verse 21, "But I will show thee that which is noted in the scripture of truth, and there is none that holdeth with me in those things but Michael, your prince." Now, once Michael, excuse me, Michael, the archangel, appears to be the angel in charge of and assigned to Israel. And so that's part of what he's saying, Michael, your prince, that he has something to do with Israel itself. Well, it goes back to some of those assignments and things. So it kind of stops off there in the... kind of stops right here in the middle of things. We'll jump back into the vision itself in chapter 11, get into all kinds of really cool history. They'll talk about the Ptolemies and the Seleucids and the intrigues amongst them, and then jump forward into the Antichrist. And finally, we'll finish up chapter 12, the shortest chapter in the book, and at least I believe it is. Only got like 13 verses, and probably won't be a very long lesson there. Let me close just going to say that, you know, like I've said, like I've ranted on, even though I pretty much have at the same time while I've been talking a lot about it, saying we shouldn't focus on it. The idea of spiritual warfare, and we see that little glimpse there a few times talking about the angels and Michael and being delayed and the fight and the battle. I'll go ahead and remind you, you know, that of course Paul himself said that our greatest battles are not physical but spiritual. In Ephesians chapter 6, verse 11 through 12, he talks about we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers. You know, it's something on a different level. It's things that we can't see. You know, it'd be different if there's a guy in front of us we could punch in the face, that we could, you know, shoot at, that we could engage in a sword fight with. But what we're fighting with is something greater than that, something supernatural as a Christian. In fact, 2 Corinthians chapter 10, verses 3 through 5. In fact, I'm going to go ahead and turn there because I can't do that off the top of my head. So, 2 Corinthians. 1 Corinthians chapter 10 just did not read right. 2 Corinthians chapter 10 says, "For though we walk in the flesh, we do not war after the flesh. For the weapons of our warfare are not carnal, but mighty through God to the pulling down of strongholds, casting down imaginations and every high thing that exalteth itself against the knowledge of God, and bringeth into captivity every thought to the obedience of Christ." The Christian life itself can be compared to Christian warfare. You know, when John Bunyan wrote Pilgrim's Progress, I mean, the storyline becomes that, you know, Christian in his journey, I mean, he's equipped with a shield and a sword. There are battles he has to do. So even in allegory form, Bunyan realized that there is an element of warfare and battle to the Christian life, and there is. It is a battle. It is a struggle. There are good times, there are blessings, there is grace, there are wonderful things to it. But deep down, there is an element of warfare to it that we can't escape, that there are forces in this world, not just human beings that hate us, that want to destroy us, but there is a spiritual force greater that wants to destroy us, that wants to hinder us. The forces of Satan want us to fail, do not want us to succeed, do not want us to share the gospel, do not want us to grow in grace. And that is really what we're dealing with. It's not a bully. It's not an atheist. Look behind them. Look behind them, and there's a deeper level to the battles we face in this life. So there we go. We'll call that good. That's Daniel chapter 10. We'll get to chapter 11 next time and get into all kinds of minute history. I really enjoy that chapter. But if you're not a history buff, you may not enjoy the first part of it because it's very intricate in its dealings. So anyway, I appreciate you listening today. Hopefully it won't be so long to finish up recording this. I'm already, I don't remember, 5 or 6 lessons or something like that into my next series I've been teaching in Sunday school that I'm going to record, which is going to be the life of Christ. We're going to go through the life of Christ chronologically. And I'm enjoying it. I've gotten a lot of positive feedback from people. So I'm really looking forward, and that's where my mind already is. I mean, I'm already thinking about the marriage of Cana and calling disciples and John the Baptist. And, you know, my mind's already there. So this is having to backtrack a little bit from stuff that I prepared a few months ago in doing this. But can't wait to get those recorded and get those out. I think that'll be a blessing to people. But we're going to get Daniel wrapped up first. I've already got one course hanging out there I haven't finished up. And I want to get this one finished before we jump into the life of Christ. But we will get there, I promise you. Check out other resources, BaptistBasics.org. You can follow BaptistBasics.org on Facebook. That's where I do most of the updates. Email me, podcast@BaptistBasics.org is the email address I give out for this. Love to hear from you. Leave a message on Facebook. Just visit the website. You can contact me from there. I appreciate you listening today. Hope it's been a help and a blessing to you, and I will see you next time.